Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. It is our regular season finale of our Hoops HD reports. It is Monday,
Woohoo!
February 28th, almost 9:30 p.m., a little before that. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, up top here. On my side, so we have John Tytel, and I think John Salica fell asleep on us.
Stalika, wake up!
Yeah, I'm ready to discuss the NEC preview here.
We've got
it's March.
That's the next one.
It's 3 hours from March. Come on.
Yeah. We got David Dorman in the center square. To his sides, we have Joey Fortson and David Griggs. Down in the bottom row from bracketeer.org, we have Rocco Miller. So a full panel here. A lot to get to. We are, in addition to be going through all the major conferences and results and all the big news today, we are also going to be at the end of the show incorporating our championship week video notebook. So we'll talk about the what happened in the Northeast Conference today and preview some of the conference tournament action coming up tomorrow. We're going to update our survival board at the end of the show too. We got a lot to get to. So I think we better just jump right into it. And why don't we start
Are we doing that on this show?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought this was the Hoops HD report.
It's everything. This is the everything show.
Okay. So it's the Hoops HD video notebook report.
Yeah, something like that. Let's start things off with a blind resume, though. We love blind resumes. And I've got two teams up here on the screen. Hopefully this screen share worked. Cross our fingers on that. But I got two teams up here. And let me start. Rocco, let me start with you. I've got a pair of resumes here. When you take a look at these two resumes, who do you like better, left or right? Or do they both suck?
Well, let's see here. You always got to start with road record.
Yes.
And so 9-1, let's go. Big advantage there against the 5-5. And then I think, the one on the left as well, not as much bad.
It's kind of even there, I thought. Yeah.
It's kind of even there. But the three road wins at the top of tier one is standing out versus just the one on the right. So I that's enough without anything else being discussed to go with the team on the left for me.
Tytel, you're a selection committee guessing expert as well. Do you agree with him? The team on the left, you like a little better?
I mean, if you like non-conference strength of schedule, it certainly is better on the
very
team
much
on
bigger.
Left.
Yeah, very much better.
And again, the team on the right seems to have had no bad losses like the tier three loss on the left. And obviously the team on the right had a close 2-point loss on the road within the final seconds on February 15th. But I wonder if that will be enough to have them miss the bubble. So close.
This kind of funny thing here is that I like to do this. I put the team on the right that both of you liked a little worse is a team that's been in most brackets recently. The team on the left is a team that has not been in most brackets we've seen recently. The teams are showing up right now. It's Wake Forest on the right, Joby, VCU on the left.
Yeah, and the don't tell me Vanderbilt on the road is a tier one win. That there's
it's a little more you learn when you look at them.
Yeah, you got to actually put the names in to a degree, because I'll take a Carolina home win, even what happened a few minutes ago, and Notre Dame home win, two teams in the field, and over a Vanderbilt team that's trash.
And Notre Dame and North Carolina are not good road teams. So I am proud to say that in
care.
My
I don't care. They're good. They are. Maybe after tonight we could talk North Carolina NIT, but they're both much better than
we
than
probably could have given
these. And Dayton is
it's hard
Dayton's
to win at
just
Dayton.
Wackadoodle. Davidson's legit. At Davidson, without a doubt, legit. But
well, everything
Dayton,
about VCU is
Dayton,
better than
it's which like, what did Dayton have for breakfast that morning? And they just didn't have something good that morning against VCU.
VCU had anything against Dayton when they were hosting them, though.
Let me real quick here. Both Rocco and Tytel, who guessed on it, did you both have Wake Forest over VCU? Rocco, let me start with you in your last bracket.
I have them both in. VCU falling in the first four, mainly because they don't have. I mean, the Davidson win is great on the road, but they don't have multiple wins against the field. That's the only one. Whereas Wake does have multiple wins against the field, albeit both at home. With Wake's OAR, I think when you scrub at the end of the process, they can actually vault up to a upper echelon 10, even lower 9 seed.
Okay. And Tytel, same thing. At the end of the day, you have Wake over VCU.
I have Wake as a 10 seed. I have VCU as out. Had Carolina lost tonight in overtime, maybe that would have flipped, but it didn't happen.
Okay. So let's, on that note, get over to the actual results of all the major conferences and start things off in the Big 12. Or maybe we should just start things off with everything that happened on Saturday. But yeah. Dorman, let me start with you. Among the mass chaos when we saw the top six teams in the nation and seven of the top 10 teams in the nation by the AP poll all lose on the same day on Saturday for the first time in history, one of those results was Baylor's win over Kansas, among many others.
It was a great game.
And TCU over Texas Tech. I guess I got to throw two of them in for this conference. Go ahead.
True. That's true. The game was in Baylor. Of all the games that were an upset on Saturday, that was probably the least surprising to me. Kansas will be just fine. Baylor had a great day. They're still missing their heart and their soul, though, down low, Baylor. I don't know if they're going to be able to rebound from that because Chichua is defense and rebounding and just intensity. I love that kid on the floor. And when you remove that, it hurts. But overall, this conference, like we've said all year, is loaded from top to bottom. Oklahoma and West Virginia probably are knocking themselves out. Everyone else looks pretty good.
Okay, well, I'll get to everyone else comment here in a second, because first I want to...
Kansas State is good.
Because first, Stalika, how about TCU's win over Texas Tech almost locking themselves into the field at this point, I think, with that win?
I mean, I could even argue that it would lock them in there. I'm not seeing too many other real negatives as far as TCU. Sure, they're a game under 500 in the Big 12, but as we've noted before, that's not officially a criteria here.
It's not. I'll pull up the TCU profile here on the left. And Griggs, I'm going to give you a few seconds here.
Dorman, although you said that strength of schedule could be a problem out of conference, though. I will admit that.
Yeah.
Let me stick on that first before going further. Rocco, TCU, non-conference strength is scheduled 275, but when you add in that Big 12, it goes all the way up to 27 in the nation. Can you really fault them?
Not unless they get too close to the cut line, but I think with TCU's wins, there's enough proof in the pudding, especially now that you add that Texas Tech to the pile. They've won on the road at Iowa State. Unfortunately for them, the Oklahoma wins don't mean as much anymore. They were helping them earlier, but I think TCU's done enough and they've got strong enough records in all the quadrants. It's not like one of those situations where you're a floundering bubble team and you don't really have that strong of wins. And then you also have a bad non-conference hit schedule. They've actually had a lot of chances to prove themselves. And the LSU win kind of puts a nail in the coffin for them to get selected.
And the strength schedule should get a little bit better as they're going to play Kansas twice in a row this week. Just a little bit better.
Right.
and that's actually a benefit to them because they won't get, except for West Virginia, obviously, Flumes. But you lose to Kansas twice, no one's going to blink. You know, you're not going to drop anywhere in the sea. If people have them as a 7 or an 8 right now, losing to Kansas twice likely is not going to drop you beyond a 7 or an 8. And then do you survive the at West Virginia loss if that were to happen? That drop you, but probably not all the way out.
I'll just say that's why the Texas Tech win was so important, because had they had lost that game, they were probably looking at perhaps 3 losses in a row. And that would have started to really skew their quadrant records to be below 500 across the board. Regardless of their good wins they've had. And so that was a really key win they got to put them in good position right now.
Griggs, I want to give you a few seconds of the team on the right there, Kansas State. They're 14 and 14 right now.
Yes.
They've got Texas Tech coming up next on the road.
They got that now. Like in their
Thank you. That game is going on as we record this. They're actually up early, but
well, okay.
You want to make a case for them, assuming they don't win this game, because I think it's going to be tough to come back and win.
Well, yes, and I'd be happy to. Like, I did a bracket today, and I'm not trying to guess the committee. I'm trying to educate them. The reason Texas Tech belongs in is because, first of all, like, when you look at their losses, everyone's hung up on their record. Well,
sorry, Griggs, we're out of time. We got to move on here.
No, I got to make my point here.
Texas Tech should be in the field.
Yeah, but when you look at the 4 losses to 5 seed lines or higher away from home, say that they had played quad 4 bye games instead, everybody would be like, 18 and 10, this team belongs in. That's why this team belongs.
This is what I will say to you, Griggs. This is my only point on this. If you're going to try to get in with that many number of losses, you better not lost a single game to a team outside the field. And there are four of the losses outside the field on this resume. There's with four. Ole Miss.
Well, if you want to count those.
Okay, so you shouldn't have lost the Ole Miss game. You shouldn't have lost the West Virginia game. You shouldn't have lost the Oklahoma State game. You shouldn't have lost the Oklahoma game. So, let's.
When you're looking at the Big 12 standings, it's easy to knock the teams at the bottom because the conference record looks bad. But if you take that off and you put up some of these teams at the bottom on the team sheets versus other bubblers, their wins are better.
Yes. Thank you.
Tytel, do you want to educate everybody here, please?
No, that's what I just did.
Yes. What would you like me to educate them on, Chad?
whether or not 14-14 K-State team or 15-14 Oklahoma team should be seriously under consideration right now.
Well, if we wait 2 hours and Kansas State upsets Texas Tech again, then I think we have a little bit of an argument. But yeah, Oklahoma, you just see all those losses and extends down into tier three. And like beating Texas Tech by 15, fantastic. Beating Arkansas by 22, doubly fantastic. But like, that's a lot of losses.
And okay, let's keep things rolling here. Take a quick look at the upcoming schedule.
We're in agreement that K-State belongs in.
As we record this, Baylor at Texas is going on, as is the K-State Texas Tech game. But the rest of the upcoming schedule, we mentioned Kansas TCU twice this week. We also see Texas Kansas on Saturday, Iowa State Baylor on Saturday as we finish up the regular season. TCU one more road game in there as well at West Virginia. But let's jump over as we continue to go through all the teams that got upset at the top of the standings. And Tytel, I know you don't want to go here, but we're going to jump over to the Pac-12 and your Arizona Wildcats. What happened in Colorado?
I mean, I can give you a half hour. I'll try to condense it. The thing that surprised me the most was Colorado's ability to score at will in the paint, because Arizona's one of, if not the tallest teams in the nation. They threw out Coloco, Tubelis, Balo off the bench. And Colorado had like 50-something points in the paint, which just stunned me, only because like if I were a team, even a Pac-12 team, like I'd be scared of going and challenging Coloco and his like three blocks a game. But they did it. They hit the boards, and like Arizona was sloppy and made turnovers and other stuff. But that's what impressed me the most.
Right. Stalika, I guess the other win of other notable thing that happened in this conference this week was Oregon, who had UCLA and USC at home and at least got a split out of it. And it could have swept them. Yeah.
Well, the good thing was they got the win against UCLA. So at least you have a win against a potential protected seed right here. They really needed two. Now, the flip side of the coin is USC actually gets a couple road wins, including the one at the aforementioned Oregon here. So if the Trojans weren't already locked, this would have sealed the deal for them.
Yeah. And Joby, what do you do with this Oregon team now that is sitting here with three great wins and
they're
three bad losses?
On the bubble. I mean, there are, and you know, the bubble's not that bad when you look at an Oregon team, which I think has swept UCLA, does have a road win against USC. Not saying in most years, this Oregon team probably is inside the bubble, but right now I think they're on the edge just out. I'll defer to Tytel and Rocco on that, but they're close enough where they certainly can play their way in, you know, make that sweep in Washington, which isn't necessarily a done deal, but you beat the Huskies, you beat the Cougars, you then go to Vegas or wherever the hell they're playing this year, Vegas, and make a little noise. And I'm not saying they have to make the final, but you know, maybe a run to the semifinals, depending on what other bubble teams do, they've got a shot. And when we get to the SEC, there's a team identical, pretty similar to them. The VCU team you had the blind resume on. There's a lot of teams in this, and Oregon has as good a shot as any of those teams, but it's going to be more competitive than years past.
Stalika, you want to compare them to Colorado. I pulled up on the right there. Yes.
I mean, this is actually courtesy of our colleague Lee Del Vecchio here. I mean, the win with Arizona does at least put Colorado into the discussion. They did split with Oregon this year, but just like the Ducks, they also broke Tytel's first commandment in that they lost to Arizona State at home. And there's the Southern Illinois loss that's also going to be pretty sketchy. But other than that.
Yeah. Well, K-State never lost to Arizona State.
I think at the end of the day, Oregon actually got a road win at Colorado. If you compare these two resumes, was the road win.
And Colorado wanted Oregon.
But you throw in the SMU win, which is a bubble-ish team as well, and three tier ones versus two tier ones. I think there's a slight edge here. I think there is an edge here to Oregon if you want to compare these two. Definitely.
I do, too.
And Colorado needs to get that net.
Throw those up again, Chad. There's one more.
Need to get their net in above 75.
There's one more area where Oregon is slightly better. Slightly better. Out of conference strength of schedule, Oregon slightly better.
That's 28 versus 328. Right there. Quick, great call. 28 versus 328. There's only a three difference between them. Upcoming schedule here. Huge week for USC actually hosting Arizona, then at UCLA this week. So those are probably the two games we're circling in the final week here of the regular season in the Pac-12. But Rocco, let's keep things rolling into the SEC, which saw two more of the crazy upsets on Saturday, with both Kentucky and Auburn going down on the road to Tennessee and Arkansas.
Yeah, how about those Hogs, Chad? Like, on fire. Bud Walton Arena has been an impossible place to win of late. And in that arena, they've beaten Kentucky, Tennessee, and Auburn now in just the last 3 weeks, all in February. Hogs are rolling at the perfect time. And, you know, for me this morning, they jumped up to the top four line. They're a four seed, 15th overall. And that's just because they're winning out some of the comparisons against teams 15 through 20, in my opinion. But they're playing hot at the right time. We already know Kentucky and Auburn are deep and lethal. I think Auburn's problem right now is Wendell Green has really been playing erratic the last couple of weeks. And, you know, he's coming over, as we know, from Eastern Kentucky. We followed him closely last year at under the radar and starting to play like an Ohio Valley player right now. And he needs to really step up because they're counting on him. He's their only real true point guard. And the rest of the team is loaded, so doesn't have to do too much. And I think he's just trying to do too much. So I think Auburn's got to really polish themselves off here in the SEC tournament to finish up so they can get back in position to feel good about a Final Four opportunity.
And Tytel, it seems like a team that we almost were overlooking all season, but I think Tennessee made a big statement here in the last couple of weeks with the wins at home over Kentucky and Auburn, have they not?
Who in the nation has three better wins than Arizona, Kentucky, Auburn? Maybe Alabama, who beat all of last year's Final Four, but like those are all fantastic. Yes, I think that when they beat my Wildcats, I was obviously impressed, to say the least. But yeah, they definitely have impressed the heck out of me. Barnes is coaching defense, and it was working all season. Look at the metrics. They're all single digits in the middle there. 10-7 against the board. That's a ton of wins. 15-0 at home. A little bit of a home court hero, but very impressive. I think that I have them as a, what we got here, as a four seed, I think. I have them as a three seed, actually.
Three seed. All right, so we're looking at potentially for four SEC teams and protected seeds if Arkansas gets in, as Rocco mentioned, on the four line as well. Tennessee, Arkansas playing each other coming up this weekend, by the way. But, Joby, I think the team on the left is the one you wanted to talk about in this conference, is it not?
Yeah, this is – we mentioned Oregon. Hey, meet your SEC twin, Florida. You have a pair of really nice wins. Though the Auburn wins, maybe it's no longer one seed maybe win, but it's still great wins. But boy, Texas Southern looks just – maybe Texas Southern – I mean, they are leading the SWAC with Alcorn, so maybe you give them a little pat. No. Florida needs to do exactly what Oregon said, what I said about Oregon. They need to take care of business, beat Vanderbilt. You might get away with a loss to Kentucky, but then you have to make noise in the SEC tournament if you are there. Otherwise, you're out because there's somebody somewhere is going to achieve in their tournament enough and collect enough wins to push you out if all you do is beat the teams you're supposed to and lose the teams that you're supposed to. They need to make some noise. Maybe against Kentucky this weekend they'll do it.
Yeah, and here's the upcoming schedule for the SEC. Real quick, we mentioned that big couple of the big games, the Kentucky-Florida game, the Arkansas-Tennessee, also Alabama-ASU, Alabama versus LSU this weekend. So and LSU Arkansas on Wednesday. So there's quite a few big games here. Griggs, I saw you had a comment.
Oh, yeah. Just the Arkansas LSU rivalry game. That's always kind of fun.
The boot. Dorman, as we continue on with top six teams that lost this weekend, let's jump over to the Big Ten. I think this is the team that started it all off on Saturday was Purdue when they fell. Should be coming up here on the screen. There it is. When they fell to Michigan State and totally righted what was a potentially sinking ship there for the Spartans.
Yeah, it was the perfect spot for Michigan State. Izzo, I'm sure, was all over his boys coming into that game. And Purdue, who I've been high on all year, higher than most on here, defense really just lacks. They just give up easy buckets and think they can outscore you on the other end. That is not going to work next month. Purdue, who historically under Katie and Painter are terrific on the defensive end, really are, it looks like Swiss cheese over there. The defense needs to pick it up or they will be going home quickly.
Wisconsin also had a very good week, Joby. They won at Minnesota and at Rutgers. Now that puts them in sole possession of first place in the conference.
Well, and this is a quiet first place all year, and rightfully so. I like Purdue, and I think Purdue could make a run in March. But with nobody nationally has been talking about Wisconsin. But when you pull up that profile, it is amazingly deep. It reminds me a lot of when you pull up Kansas's out of nowhere. And the number of tiers, look at that top left. Just look at that top left when it pops.
It's coming up.
It here, is a second. There very it is. Impressive. And on top of that, on top of what you don't have, I don't think Rutgers lost. I mean, this is a team that's still competing for a bid to a degree, though they're probably out right now. Wisconsin, why no one is real. And they were on this reveal and all that stuff. This is a two seed right now, maybe ahead of their conference mates, Purdue. When you look at the depth of the resume that Wisconsin's put together, this Wisconsin team can, and I think it has the potential to really, really be on one of the top two seed lines.
So, Joby, all those weeks where I had Wisconsin on my two line, you're finally agreeing with me now. The other thing is that Houston win is better than what it probably looks like, because that was before Houston had lost two key players. This Wisconsin resume, just to echo what Joby said, is amazingly good.
Rocco, on the right there,
we constantly refer to the Providence loss, you know, missing key component in the Providence loss at home. Though losing to Providence is nothing to be shameful of, given what Providence is.
Yeah, even had they had him, it still wasn't a bad loss.
And the St. Mary's win looks better by the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Rocco, on the right there, I've got Iowa up here.
Why?
Team whose resume was kind of missing something really picked it up over this past week, the win at Ohio State. Just as a side note, they're currently blasting Northwestern at his home as we record this as well.
Yeah, so in the past week, they went from one win against the field to three, so that drastically helps, and they got the key road win that was missing against the field. So now you can start to mix in those three quad two wins, which are non-tournament teams. Virginia is still hanging by a thread, but it starts to, you know, match their metrics more. It was a big disparity in the past, and their metrics, of course, are very strong on the predictive end of things. So I think it's going to be one of those situations where Iowa is clearly one of the 36 best at-large teams in the pool. And then as you go through seeding, they're just going to keep creeping up and up and up. And I've got him as my top seventh seed today.
Tytel, I got to ask you about the bubble here, and specifically the Michigan Wolverines, who each game they play seems like they're in and then out again. Huge win over Rutgers, but then they lose the game on Sunday. So where are you with this Michigan team?
I thought every win against Rutgers was a huge win. No, I have them in as an 11 seed right now, certainly fading a bit down the stretch. No shame in losing to Illinois by 8, even if it is at home. But Chad or David, can you remind us how Tom Burnett feels about teams winning or losing when you're missing your head coach due to suspension?
He doesn't.
well, it is something that they will factor in, but yeah. It does not necessarily mean that you're going to get any extra credit or lose any credit for it. Quite frankly, you know, I think you should get if you win without your head coach, I think you should get a little extra credit for it. But he didn't really seem to say for certain you would get that. But that would have gets Rutgers, obviously, there.
I think if you beat Michigan with all Juwan Howard, you deserve extra credit for it.
Yeah, what about beating Rutgers without Juwan Howard? Do we not count that? I mean, what about the wins?
The problem is it's a tier three win also because it was at home. Okay. So you got to scroll down to find it, Rocco.
And to further Rocco's point, I don't think you punish Rutgers as much because Michigan didn't have to deal with Juwan Howard.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Juwan Howard's got something for you, Griggs. upcoming schedule here, Stalico, real quick. We've got, several key games coming up this week. Actually, a ton of them, starting with the Purdue-Wisconsin tomorrow night.
Well, there's Purdue-Wisconsin. You got Michigan State-Michigan. You got Rutgers-Indiana. And then you get Iowa-Michigan coming up on Thursday, which is one of the makeup games. And Michigan-Ohio State figures to be a nice little finale right here.
Yeah, maybe really want to circle that Rutgers-Indiana game. It's a very bubblicious looking game here, especially could have been a lot worse for Indiana if they had blown their game last night, which they almost did after being up huge in Minnesota. They came, it was almost a complete collapse there.
Meanwhile, I know they're like 100 miles away from the tournament, but I would like to congratulate Nebraska on getting the biggest blowout win this week with a 23-point road win at Penn State.
They just have not been the same since 10 miles left.
I mean, Dorman, let's finish off the last of those top 10 teams that lost this weekend. And it was the last
in the
games.
Bubble of 10 miles was still there.
Hold on. Now the buzzer won't stop, Griggs. Thanks a lot. Okay. Dorman, Gonzaga. I'm going to go to Rocco because you were at the game. Dorman, I'll go to you next. But Rocco, Gonzaga loses at St. Mary's. Incredible game, incredible atmosphere this on Saturday.
Yeah, and you know what? I've been to that game now 3 times, and it's always an incredible atmosphere. I didn't feel different from the beginning than the other times. The biggest difference, of course, is Gonzaga didn't start fast, and that makes all the difference in the world. And St. Mary's is so old and experienced. Tommy Cousy's a 24-year-old point guard, and a lot of 21-plus-year-olds on that front line. And they all bought in defensively. And I think they stole some Texas Tech game film. Texas Tech lost to Gonzaga, but they play that really tough baseline defense. And St. Mary's implemented that and perfected it, learned from their loss in Spokane. And the biggest question is, can you sustain it for 40 minutes? And it got down to 7 points with, I think, 3.5 minutes to go, but they pulled it out late. And first time ever Randy Bennett's gone 16-0 at home. And so that's that was a huge accomplishment. They had one other chance in 2013, and they blew the home finale to Loyola Marymount. And so it was a special day, stormed the court, got to talk to Coach Bennett in his office after the game. So really awesome day, unforgettable day for people at St. Mary's.
Yeah. Dorman, I think the other two teams worth noting are kind of the bubble teams here, which was San Francisco and BYU. The Dons split their games this week, although one of them was a loss to the Zags. BYU wins at home against a pair of garbage teams at the bottom of the conference.
I've been screaming this is a four-bid conference all year, but BYU and San Francisco have work to do. One, they better make the semifinals. One's going to get St. Mary's, obviously. The other's going to get Gonzaga. If they fall, either of them fall before the semis, it's another bad loss, although Santa Clara isn't a terrible loss, but it's going to be a long week if San Francisco or BYU do not get to the semis and at least show really well.
Well, the thing is that they're scheduled to play each other in the quarterfinal round there as the 4 and the 5 seed, with Santa Clara jumping up to the 3 seed. Could that be an elimination game?
I
didn't realize that either.
They were on the SOP, but they were on the separate quarters. Okay, that game's enormous. The loser could be out now. This is real serious for the loser, and they will be in for a long week. Just to jump back quickly to the Gonzaga St. Mary's, The coach is now, if you're playing Gonzaga, you have a blueprint. St. Mary's showed you what you needed to do. Gonzaga's been scoring about 85, 90 points a game. I think they ended up with about 55, 30, 35 short of their average. You slow the game down. You have to have experienced, solid guard play. St. Mary's had that. And like Rocco said, their defense was on point. They played extremely well. They competed the entire game. And Gonzaga just didn't get easy looks like you've seen them get all year. St. Mary's played brilliantly.
Yes, they did.
And Chad, I can help for the audience explain the bracket a little bit.
Yes, because it did not go by the standings we saw. It is different. Yeah. Go ahead.
So the WCC for the second straight year decided to implement Ken Palm's adjusted winning percentage for the seeding. And therefore, because of the fact that Santa Clara did not, and this is very controversial here locally, play at Portland, they dogged out of that game late. They end up with a better winning percentage despite being swept by the Dons and get the 3 seed, which gives them a little bit of an edge on their side of the bracket with better chance to get to the finals at least. And then it did shuffle, I think, one of the bottom seeds as well. But that's why you ended up with San Francisco as the 4, which is kind of the main story there. And anyway, should be an interesting tourney. Obviously, a long wait for Gonzaga and St. Mary's till next Monday.
Can I ask you a question? Is the BYU San Fran BYU loser out, in your opinion?
No, I feel like San Francisco is pretty safe right now. I feel like a lot of bids would have to be stolen for them to really be in jeopardy. They're a top 25 metrics team, and I know you don't get selected by metrics. I think they're a little less safe when it comes to being the best, one of the best 36 teams, but I think they've done enough. As long as they don't get blown out or something, I think they should be able to get in.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, okay. The interesting thing is I think Santa Clara, for their bid purposes, would be better if they were the 4, because then they get a good win against BYU, who's another bubble team, and have the shot against Gonzaga, and then they're in, even if they lose to a St. Mary's, I think, or San Francisco.
But they did beat.
I think they beat
St. Mary's
scenario.
Already.
But they,
did.
Yeah. But if they beat San, if they right now beat Portland, then St. Mary's, and then lose to Gonzaga, they're out. They're not in. They're not in with just a St. Mary's.
No,
but they need
it
for the NIT. They need it for the NIT, Joby. We got to get it. They're on the bubble for NIT. I'm serious.
No, I agree. I think they're in the NIT. If the NIT were picked today, Santa Clara is not just like an 8 or 7 in the NIT. They're in the middle of the NIT, which gives them protection against the spots that will be taken by conference number 1 seeds who are upset in their tournaments from 1 bid leagues.
That's who gets the 8 and 7 seeds.
Let's jump over to the Big East. Griggs, let's start by congratulating the Providence Friars for their first ever regular season Big East championship.
Kind of hard to believe, but I guess it was. You know, they've had some great teams at Providence, but now that I remember it, some of those Dave Gavin teams were pre-Big East. So, yeah, but big congratulations to the Friars, having an outstanding year, continuing to lead the nation, I think, in wins by 5 points or less, number of them, but just still really good. They go to Villanova this week, and if they win that Nova game, I know that they're lower in the seed list, probably largely because of their predictive rankings. But if they win that Nova game, nobody's going to say that they deserve a 1 seed. But should people be saying they deserve a 1 seed if they go to Nova and win? Like, look, it'll take a second to pop up here. But when it does, look at what this resume is going to look like.
I don't know that, because you're not seeing that pop in the tier one that you're seeing on the Baylor or Kansas, Griggs.
At Connecticut, at Wisconsin, and at Villanova,
it's 5 versus 11 or 12 wins. It's okay, the number of wins.
But Kansas has not beaten anybody above the 7 line on the road, and Providence will have beaten Wisconsin, Connecticut, and Villanova on the road. I mean, there's, to me, yeah, Kansas has more, but their home wins against, they're either at home or they're against teams that aren't nearly as good as that.
Like, okay, I'll do this for 3 seconds here. Let's quickly do this. I'll take a quick sidetrack here. Providence, David, and Kansas head-to-head. Go ahead and try to sell me one more time when you see all that tier one.
Okay, because the best road win is Iowa State. Like, again, in some of the tier one, at St. John's, at West Virginia, at K-State, at Oklahoma State, at Oklahoma, North Tech, that's not indicative of a one seed the way winning at UConn, winning at Whiskey, and winning at Villanova is.
I don't know that you're going to sell anybody, but go ahead. Dorman, you had a comment on it?
Griggs, forget they played and forget the head-to-head matchup. Who do you like more, Providence or Wisconsin here?
Who do I think? Probably Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's tight. Far,
but that will not be the case if Providence goes to Nova and wins.
Tytel,
if
on the
Providence goes to Nova and wins, and they're not at least on the two line, I think the malpractice from the committee, you know, because I still think that 15 yes. seed is ridiculous. I think it's
yes.
ridiculous they were 15, especially with Tom Burnett's comment of metrics. And the Wisconsin Providence game saying, hey, Providence should get credit for it. Well, you didn't give it to them. You know, I worry that Providence will has a ceiling as a three, even with a Villanova win without pulling the double.
The double meaning when they win the conference tournament as well. But Tytel, yeah. The team that I think is the most dangerous with this conference tournament is the team on the right there that's coming off of a Villanova win over the past week. How about this red hot UConn Huskies suddenly?
They are, but you say suddenly, I also have to remind you that if you go way back to Thanksgiving, they did beat a little team called Auburn, and what's nice is that I think that in the past, the tournament committee has cared about how teams are doing in their final 10 games. I don't think Burnett said that's the case necessarily now.
So he said it's not.
The whole body of work for the whole season, and obviously, like, sweeping Marquette's great. You certainly don't want to stub your toe at against DePaul at home in the season finale, and put this one in the back burner. The Providence lost by 4 points back in December. I believe that was without the big man, Adama Sanogo. So if yes. they factor player availability during games, that has to be factored in. If he's healthy, maybe they beat Providence back then. Who knows?
You're right. Stalika, I know you don't want to do it. You are a Xavier guy. Do you want to make the case why your Musketeers don't even belong in the field? Because I know the fan base there does.
I think I would be more than happy to make the case that they don't belong in right now. I mean, I've probably discussed this ad nauseum on the site ever since Nate Johnson had the deep bone bruise against UConn a couple weeks ago. They're 0-4 since then. They've had two blowout losses at home. And had they just hung on to beat Providence, their complexion would have been completely different. The funny thing is they're going to St. John's on Wednesday. That might actually be a less hostile environment than what's going to be in store for them in Georgetown, especially if they find a way to blow that one.
Could that be Georgetown's lone Big East win of the season at going to Xavier and winning on over the weekend?
We didn't get to hear this on TV, but even the students were chanting "Fire Travis." It's gotten real ugly on Victory Parkway.
Well, I think you're being a little hard on him here, Stalika. I mean, had they made a couple more plays against Seton Hall, they would have cut it to 13.
Well, let me put it this way: we always talk about injuries. Well, if the guy that's injured does come back and they go back to their winning ways, we're not going to excuse their losses, but if this is who the Musketeers are going to be the rest of the way, why should we give them any leniency? Yeah. I would have said the same thing 2 years ago had the field gone on as we speak.
They're going to make the field, but they're going to lose in the first round.
I think that's probably more realistic. The key games coming up this week, the huge game tomorrow night, Providence at Villanova. You also want to take a look at UConn at Creighton and Seton Hall at Creighton. So Creighton with a pair of big home games this week as well. But let's keep things rolling along here.
Let me say one more thing in defense of the Musketeers here. As it is right now, they'd probably be the number 8 seed. If they can find a way to beat Butler in the first round, I'd be a little skeptical of our Providence because I wouldn't want to face the Musketeers this early in a conference tournament with everything on the line.
That is a good point. If they're in that 8-9 game point. Matched up with Providence, that's a scary matchup for Providence in the quarterfinals of the Big East.
We've really already seen what the Musketeers can do to Providence in the overtime.
Both those games were incredible. In fact, instead of the NCAA tournament, it should just be a best of 7 series between Xavier and Providence.
Joby, you're our ACC guy. I'm not even going to torture you with what happened against Florida State by Virginia. Maybe I'll just talk about what happened against Duke and what Duke did. Then I followed up with the Syracuse win. And how about these
Blue Devils? Let's talk Duke, because Duke is proving that they are legit. Going into John Paul Jones against a team that has a pretty good matchup with him. I mean, Virginia matches up pretty well with Duke, given that Duke still relies a lot on athleticism, but with some parts, Roach's experience, et cetera, but that Virginia defense actually is a bad matchup. Duke came in, went into a very loud, hostile environment, won. Then they go into a less loud, hostile environment in the Dome, and won big. Duke is proving that they are a legit, in my opinion, legit protected seed. And probably if they pull the double, which I think they will, win the ACC tournament at the end of the day. They're starting to play at that level where they should win every game. They go out by a solid margin. They were looking at the two line, and they are the only team that's going to be wearing white in the ACC, but they will be on the two line.
Rocco, on the right there, I've got the big bubble team question of the North Carolina Tar Heels picked up an overtime win tonight against a bad Syracuse team. Let me scroll down a bit so we can find another loss. There it is, way down there, the Pitt loss. But what about these Tar Heels? A lot of people are putting them back in again.
Yeah, I mean, they found themselves back in for me today. The way I'm looking at them is basically just a team sitting there. You can take them if you want them, or you can leave them if there's better choices. And so last week I had better choices, so I took other teams. And this time North Carolina stood out a little bit. Now, with their road win over the weekend, they actually improved their metrics a tad. But at the end of the day, there's still enough reasons to leave them out, and there's enough reasons to throw them in the first four. And I really don't have a strong opinion on either side. I really care more about the other teams around them, unless North Carolina adds another win against the field. They just have the Michigan win. Virginia Tech is not a field team. And Virginia Tech can still change that as well. So if that changed, that could be the best thing that happens to North Carolina, because that would suddenly give them three field wins as they've swept the Hokies. So, but the way it stands today, they're just kind of in purgatory, trying to stay at sea level, and they're just sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they win at Duke on Saturday, changes things entirely. But can you go to Cameron and win? And Mike, in Coach K's final home game, is there any shot at that happening? I don't think so. Tytel, are the Vatek Hokies in the bubble picture at all here with that nice net that they have and a couple of wins in a row now?
I say no. Even if they win out, that's 20-11. And a decent little seed for the ACC tourney. I just don't see a signature win on this page. And when you have 11 losses and soon to be 12, because I don't think they're winning the ACC tourney, I would say, and feel free to jump all over me if you think I'm wrong, I think you need a signature win, and 1 point over Miami ain't it.
Does anyone want to make a Vatek case?
Not for
and we're not really hearing it. Okay,
they need to do what a lot of these teams do, and except more. They don't need to just win and you lose in the quarters. They need to go all the way to the finals of the ACC tournament and get a tier one win as Tytel against a tournament team on the way. That means you beat the bracket's still very up in the air of how it'll turn out, but you need to beat Wake, North Carolina. And probably not even North Carolina, need to beat Wake, who would be a tier one winner, Duke. You cannot get a tier two over Miami, can't get a tier two over Notre Dame, can't get a tier three over a tier two over Virginia. You need to actually get a solid win over a solid tournament team.
Okay, the big game this week is obviously the Carolina-Duke game on Saturday. The other one to circle might be the Notre Dame at Florida State. Florida State obviously coming off of that huge win over Virginia. Notre Dame, definitely a team that looks like they're in, but definitely use a few more wins as well. Over in the American, though, we're up to Dorman. How about you? Over in the American, where Houston bounced back from their early loss to SMU to get the big win over the weekend.
Yeah, I was giving SMU some life, but they really needed to at least hang in there and maybe get edged out in the end or pull off a huge upset. They didn't get it. I believe as long as Houston rolls through this conference tournament, this is a one bid Houston. This is a one bid league, and Houston's the one.
Yes, Talika, SMU and Memphis, I'll pull them both up here. Obviously, Memphis still gets Houston in regular season coming up next weekend. Is that the only team? Is that the only shot that we have? Is maybe Memphis wins that game and gets the sweep of them?
Well, I think we could also be looking at a potential bid thief in the American Conference tournament, yes. Although I think it's very unlikely that someone outside of SMU or Memphis is going to end up winning the conference. Maybe Tulsa. I mean, not Tulsa. Maybe Tulane or Temple. But I don't see anyone outside of that five even having remotely a shot.
Okay, Joby, I got to ask you about this, and because Griggs did it as well today. I look at this Memphis profile. I see a team with two wins against the field, very good ones, at Houston, home against Alabama. I also see a team with seven losses to teams that are not in the field. Yet, I think you would have them in right now also?
Yeah, I have them in right now because they're good right now. Promotes them over some of the warts of the other. I mean, those are great ones. At Houston is not just an
seven losses.
Alabama is, we're talking close to protect the seed out of conference, which you give credit for. Yes, Georgia, East Carolina. But right now they're playing better. They are playing solid. Now I have them in by the skin of their teeth. I mean, they are playing game team number what? Yeah, what is the JNG? Have them up there. I mean, it is, you know, you're talking barely in. So if all of a sudden Oregon were to go on the road and then do something in the Pac-12 tournament, they earn their way past Memphis. If Florida beats Kentucky this weekend, they earn their way past Memphis. I think Memphis is ahead, but if they just play solid, someone's going to pass them. You know, North Carolina beats Duke, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. Rocco, you were shaking your head. Do you have them in also? Or
I do.
Really? I don't get it, but I guess I'm wrong on this one.
I don't get it.
Well,
either.
Yeah, I totally get the sentiment. They've had basically two different seasons, right? They had that horrible stretch where you see most of those bad losses occurred. I think the committee today, if we're the committee, like we will be in a week, you know, we're going to be talking about what's the team we're seeing today. And that's a team that just won at Houston. It's a team that's been playing lights out, that has crushed Wichita State by, you know, 20-something plus. Obviously not a tournament team. But with DeAndre Williams and Jalen Duren and some of the talent they have, it's a team not only capable of going first four to the Sweet 16, they're playing like that, they could go first four to the Final Four. It's just a team that I don't think the committee wants to leave out of the tournament.
Okay. Fair enough. We'll see. Obviously, they do something awful, like going loose to South Florida, cut up in a couple nights here.
Yeah, then
that's it.
Good night.
But the big game this week, obviously, Houston at Memphis on Sunday. Memphis, really, they win that game. Again, now you have a super Houston.
Yeah.
Let's jump over to the Mountain West Conference, where as we record this right now, actually, San Diego State is up at halftime in Wyoming, even though I can't seem to get the scores on the standings on the screen here. But see here, Griggs, you know, putting aside this, I think the big things were what happened over the course of last week with Boise State beating San Diego State, Colorado State beating Wyoming. Then you throw in that each of those teams then picked up a couple win over at the weekend on Saturday, Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. So you're starting to see these again, teams toward the top here getting defining wins, particularly Colorado State and Boise, like you said. I have San Diego State really, really close to the cut line, and they're at Wyoming now. I think that this would be huge for them to beat a team that, to me, looks like, while they're not exactly protected seed by any means, they're still inside the bubble, and to go on that floor and win, especially when Wyoming's been as tough at home as they have. That would arguably be the best win of the year for San Diego State. I know they've beaten St. Mary's and Colorado State, but like this would be their first and really only win against a likely tournament team on the road. And to me, that's just going to make the difference. I know a lot of people here are bigger on the Aztecs right now than I am, but if they get this one, they're not even hovering around my bubble anymore.
Yeah. Can I jump in here, Chad?
Sorry, Dorman. Just real quick, I just want to point out Griggs's favorite comment. It applies in this game. A team that beat somebody on their home floor that nobody else did. That's what San Diego State can do tonight. Wyoming has not lost at home. I mean, we need you in the committee room, Griggs, because you can sell the hell out of that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's a great win.
Yep. Dorman, you're to comment on it also.
And I am here to educate the committee. That's why I'm here.
Yes.
I've been singing the praises of this Mountain West all year, and I agree with Griggs. San Diego State is right on the cut line. As of this win tonight would be enormous and really probably get them on the good side of the bubble. One thing, as of tonight, they sit in the 4 slot in the Mountain West for the seeding for the conference tournament next week. Where in Las Vegas at the Thomas and Mack Center? Who is the 5 seed they would find in the first round? That UNLV team. UNLV has had some success with San Diego State, although San Diego State has beaten them this year. If San Diego State goes to that game and loses in that quarterfinal game against UNLV, it'll be a really long week for the Aztecs.
Tytel, Wyoming, the game is as recorded. This is still fairly early, the second half. But do the Cowboys have a little bit to start worrying about if they don't win this game? Because you really look at 2 home wins against the field, and that's it when you go deep into this resume.
The win at Fresno is pretty good.
I hear you, Chad, but like if they lose this one and win the last 2, that'll put them at 25-6. Obviously, if they lose to a bad team in the first round of the conference tourney or whenever round they play, that's one thing. But I would say 25 wins with a net of 39. Joby, that sounds like a tournament team to me, doesn't it to you?
Yeah, it does. I don't have a lot of faith in them once they get there. To be honest, and I wouldn't put them very game past the first round of my bracket. But yes, as far as profiles go, I don't see how you leave out a 25-7. We'll give them the loss in the first round, a 25-7 team from a conference that's played this good with wins against some of those teams. And remember, they lose those games. They're still sitting as a 3 seed at a minimum. So, you know, I think San Diego State is in solidly, and I don't see a team finishing ahead of San Diego State, you know, which is how it might shake out. I don't know. But anyway, yes, Wyoming's in most likely. Long answer for a short question.
Here's the upcoming schedule. The other key game besides the one that's going on right now is Saturday, Boise State at Colorado State. Definitely circle that one.
Very, very large.
Stalica, over in the A-10.
Well, just real quick. I mean, I think just real quick, one more thought. This conference as a whole has really improved, and it's just amazing how much better it has gotten since Tim Miles arrived. What the?
Okay.
Why would you buzz that?
Stalica, over in the A-10, Davidson started to look a lot better with a couple of wins this past week as we head closer and closer to the conference tournament. And maybe the question is whether or not there is a second bid here besides them. Am I right?
Well, we thought it might be the Dayton Flyers, but they had a major bed wetting at LaSalle. So that's probably going to force the Flyers to have to win the conference tournament in D.C.
Real quick, John, was anybody watching that game? Because you weren't, if you were.
How could you?
Well, the video got cut with 10 seconds to go.
Oh, that's right. Kamara was out, which was something Dayton fans are praying that the committees noticed.
But, it doesn't matter. You lost to LaSalle. Well, they weren't watching anyway.
there's too many bad losses in Dayton's profile. But, you know, I think we mentioned St. Bonaventure last week. We mentioned VCU at the top of the show. Rocco, are one of those two teams a second bid out of this conference, either VCU or the Bonnies?
I mean, I think VCU's right there. I put them into the first 4 the last couple forecasts. I just, you know, when you compare them to those last few options right now, I love those road wins. You showed them on the blind resume. You know, throw Vandy out, like the third one, you could put Richmond as the third one. Those are 3 of the best road wins in the A-10, and they got all of them. And they're also 10-3 in road games as a whole. And, you know, the committee tells us every year, what did you do? Where did you do it? And, you know, who did you play? Where did you play them? And how did you do? And VCU's kind of got that story going their way. They're also in the top 40 strength of record right now as well.
And look at the last two games here. They get those bodies we just mentioned at home coming up tomorrow. And then they're at St. Louis, which would be another quality win if they pick up. They win these two. I mean, I think we're really looking at these bodies. Oh.
They'll be feeling good.
Sorry, these Rams here. I'm sorry.
Chad, real Bonnie's quick, can too, you put – Yeah. Both of those. I was going to say, if you put VCU next to BYU in a blind resume, I bet we'd all pick VCU.
I know I would, but let's take a real quick look here at the upcoming schedule. I think that's probably the key game is that VCU Bonnies game. You also want to take a look though at Davidson. They're going to be hosting George Mason and at Dayton on Saturday. So, Flyers fans are probably going to need that and a lot more, I think, unfortunately for them. One more team to get to is in the, they are still in the top 25. Tytel, the Murray State Racers finished off as one of only two teams in the nation to go undefeated against conference play, along with South Dakota State. Struggled a little bit this week, but where do you have Murray State heading into the tournament, especially if they can pull this double and win the OVC tournament as well?
So let's clarify. They struggled a lot this week, Chad, and pulled out a miraculous win.
They won. 2-0 week. A 2-0 week's a 2-0 week, right?
I think I have them as an 8 seed right now, and obviously they couldn't be trending more upward because it seems like they're never going to lose again. I think that a month ago I would have given Belmont or Moorhead a chance, but they've just been, like, destroying the top teams in this league. So while they could stub their toe, as we saw they almost did the other night, I think this is the Murray State Invitational. I think they win every game by double digits. And I think that with such a amazing record of like 30-2, 31-2, I mean, Joby, is a 6 seed possible, or is that like a little out of control?
No, I mean, you need a lot of help because you're talking, when you talk 6 seeds, you're saying, okay, St. Mary's doesn't win another game. Well, they still made the semifinals, if you're talking about LSU still has all that strength in there. You know, you're saying Iowa State, you don't do anything more. Colorado State, you're going to fall on your face. Seven's possible, though. But it's out of their control because they don't get the opportunities to improve the resume, whereas those around them and ahead of them most certainly do.
Something that are we agreed that this team is a lock? They absolutely are.
Yeah,
I agree.
Even if they lose to
Tennessee State, who somehow makes their way to play them and beat them, they're still in.
Yeah, because I could foresee them. I think that they know that they're in, and there is a team. I if you follow under the radar, this SEMO team has come to life recently. It wouldn't be totally nuts if SEMO knocked them out. I don't think they would beat them if it was a game that Murray really needed to have or showed up to. But Murray's been playing with their food a lot recently, and if they fall behind against SEMO the way that they have recently, it wouldn't shock me if SEMO beat them.
On that note, that is all of our Hoops HD portion of the show. But let's kind of switch modes a little bit over to our Championship Week video notebook mode of the show, because we did see the first conference tournament game of the season tonight. It was Fairleigh Dickinson hosting Central Connecticut. Rocco, FDU got out to a big lead early, and the Blue Devils came storming back to take their first lead with 7 seconds left of the game.
That's incredible. And you know what? If we're going to have only one team go on to the come off the survival board tonight, Chad, we might as well give Fairleigh Dickinson a special night. I got to cover a game there a couple of years ago. It's a special place, and Greg Herenda is one of the most entertaining coaches in the country. So, you know, even though it's sad that they're knocked out here tonight, I think they get their special night with the Survivor Board. That's kind of cool.
And we got to give props to Central Connecticut to become the first Northeast Conference 9 seed to ever win a game in the Northeast Conference tournament history. Of course, this was the first,
or the first nine game. Seed ever.
first nine seed ever to win a game or play a game in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
The NEC adding that 8-9 game in just for this year only to make up for the cancellations they had during the regular season and having unbalanced schedules and the like. That was it for the review, but we have three conferences that are going to be kicking off tomorrow night. Stalika, let me start with you in the A-Sun, where it is first round day. These are on-campus sites, so North Florida heading to Lipscomb, North Alabama heading to Gulf Coast, Eastern Kentucky heading to Kennesaw, and Stetson heading to Central Arkansas. Your thoughts on any of these four games? You see any upsets coming here?
I forget if this is the first time that North Alabama's been allowed to play in the tournament. No, I don't see them getting Gulf Coast right now. But then again, Eastern Kentucky, they're going to be new to this conference tournament after spending years in the Ohio Valley. There's maybe a shot against Kennesaw, but I'm not seeing it elsewhere, even with an underachieving Lipscomb team this year, with one notable exception back in November.
Yeah, I think Dorman also, this Central Arkansas team was in the basement of the West Division all season, came on strong late to pull out that three seed and get the home game. I'm kind of looking at them at being able to get by Stetson at least, and maybe even give Jacksonville a run in the next round.
Absolutely. The way they're playing, I'm with you. That was quite a turnaround. They looked as bad as any team in the country November, December, and all of a sudden they're winning games in the A-Sun and look good doing it. The one team I'm kind of pulling for here, and I believe Greg's mentioned it a few weeks ago, building a program from nowhere and from the bottom is really a tough, tough thing to do. Bellarmine coming from a different level of basketball and be able to succeed in this conference is really an incredible feat. I have no connection or anything. I think they're really well coached, and I hope Bellarmine shows really well, because what they've done to this program is really impressive.
I would only object in the sense that it's not a program that's come completely out of nowhere. They have won a D2 national title under Davenport, so they do have a tradition of winning, and actually came pretty close to winning the regular season in their first season, but came up short against Liberty.
I agree with you, Stalika, but it's a Division I. It's a different ball game, and the level of play is different, and it's just tough to come in and win. And I agree with you. Tradition is winning, but to me, it's a different level.
Just a quick note, North Alabama, Bellarmine, whoever comes out of that quarterfinal there, unless it's Gulf Coast, if Bellarmine or North Alabama wins this conference tournament, the auto bid will go to the number one seed, who is Jacksonville State. So if Jacksonville State ends up playing Bellarmine in the championship game, it's going to be a meaningless championship game, actually, in terms of the auto bid. But Rocco, who do you have winning this thing? Is it Jacksonville State? Is it Bellarmine? Is it Liberty?
It's a tough call. I mean, they've all had their spurts and their reasons for concerns. Like every time you think Liberty is going to run away with it, they turn around and lose. Gulf Coast has got Tavian Dunn-Martin. He's been incredible. I don't know. I also like this Dolphins team, this Jacksonville Dolphins team. Maybe I'll pick them just to be different. Jordan Mincy, first year, he's already done incredible things. I think they went perfect at home this year. And, we're at campus sites, so they can play there at least for their first game. So let's go with an upset and take the Jacksonville Dolphins.
Jacksonville Dolphins. Okay. Joby, it is also first round day in the Horizon League tomorrow.
That's my pick.
Okay. Okay, your pick is Liberty for that one. But how about the Horizon League? Let's start off with the four games tomorrow. IUPUI is at Oakland, Green Bay is at Detroit, Robert Morris is at Youngstown, and Milwaukee, despite being the ninth seed, is hosting UIC as the slap to UIC for leaving the conference, although they do get to play in the conference tournament.
Well, I know IUPUI, who is going to be mentioned in the consideration, they won't win it probably, consideration for the centenary, is not going to pull the upset. Sorry, because I actually think, so many times you have seen preseason teams that are the most talented play. We use the term play with our food. It's already been used tonight. That is what Oakland has done, in this under the radar situation. Either they continue to do that, which they'll still beat IUPUI. I'm very confident, but either they continue to do that and lose immediately, or they make a run all the freaking way. I think you have to watch Oakland because they are probably the most talented team, even ahead of Cleveland State. They're probably the most talented team in this conference. So you cannot deny the fact that team could make a charge.
Well, Tytel, it's been interesting that this conference, which is normally like a 12 seed, 13 seed, I think most people on you, I think you as well, I look at the 16 seed out of whoever comes out of this. Am I right?
Only because we can't give them a 17 seed, I guess. I mean, yeah, like, I wish that they had a little better net or conference strength of schedule. But, yeah, I just don't think it's there. But fun fact for Purdue fans, since January 1st, the Purdue Boilermakers are a whopping 12-4, while the Purdue Fort Wayne Mastodons are 15-4. Go, John Kaufman, go.
Yeah, and that is actually kind of funny because that is my pick to win this event, Rocco. The red hot Fort Wayne Mastodons. You with me?
Totally with you. I think they're clear cut the team to beat. They beat Cleveland State, Oakland, both down the stretch, and of course haven't lost since January. 9-0 in February. They're playing when you look at conference only stats, which I think is all that matters because it's a conference tournament. best team in the conference in adjusted defense, best effective field goal percentage shooting team, best at 40 forcing turnovers, best at shooting threes, and best at protecting the ball. I mean, give me the Mastodons, and you guys can have the field.
I'm with you. I am totally with you.
Don't forget about the Norse of Northern Kentucky.
Yeah that's my pick.
Me too. They've taken down Cleveland State, Wright State, and Purdue Fort Wayne. That team is live, well coached.
Yeah, that's a live senior Layden. I'm with you on that one, Dorman.
They just got to avoid the landmine against Detroit Mercy. But other than that, I agree. Norse up.
Okay. Griggs is also first round day in the Patriot League tomorrow. Bucknell is going to be at Lafayette. American is going to be at Holy Cross. Give us about 20 or 30 minutes on these two games.
Well, okay. Okay, 20 to 30 minutes.
You're out of time.
Oh, no,
seriously,
thank God.
You call for either one of these to be an upset or no?
I don't. Well, no. I could see Bucknell taking down Lafayette. I don't think that qualifies as an upset. And I kind of think it's going to be a chalky tournament with Colgate in Navy advancing to the championship game, Navy building up a 25-point lead with 16 minutes to go and losing.
That would be Navy season in a nutshell. But Sleek, are you with him on Colgate winning this event? Are you going to go? You going somewhere else?
I would very much like to see Lafayette send Fran O'Hanlon into retirement with at least a one more upset win over Colgate. But I think they'll just have to settle for a win over Bucknell right here. But I think the Colgate tradition is going to continue this year at least.
Yeah, Tytel, you also on Colgate here?
If this was played at a neutral site, I'd have some doubts. But Coach Matt Langel, a Penn alum, has played a bunch of home games this year, and the only one he's lost was way back in November to an out-of-conference Niagara team who did beat him by double digits. But he doesn't lose at home to Patriot teams. It's Colgate.
Okay, let's run over to our survival board, or let's not run over to our survival board because I seem to have lost the screen share here.
You lost the survival board.
I lost the screen share. I was coming back in a second.
What is the committee supposed to do now?
This is our NCAA tournament survival board. You can find the conference tournaments up there at the top. You can also find our survival board where we track
you can
how
find
many
Brian
teams.
Black. There he is.
And this Brian, our good friend Brian Black is on there. And this is where the survival board stood after last night. Heading into the action today, there were 337 teams available that were still eligible to win it all. And David, there's different demarcations of teams here, correct?
Yes. One is locks. That means that you're in even if you lose all your remaining games. Another one under consideration. Maybe you're in, maybe you're not. You might have work to do. You might be in for now, but you need to hold serve or whatever. Maybe you're so close to the bubble that we just don't know. There's teams that can only get in with the auto bid. And then there's teams that are just totally out.
So if the committee's in the committee room and thinking about Maine or Stony Brook as teams, the answer is
they're out. They're crossed out, so they know not to select those teams.
Okay, so if they're looking at maybe Davidson or Dayton or Richmond or St. Bonaventure, they should think about those, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're thinking about one of these Big East teams, maybe that are on there, like UConn or Carver Bible, they're locks, correct?
Yeah. Carver Bible and UConn are locks. Because, wait a minute, Carver. Well, that's what the board says. I guess
somebody's definitely messing with our board here. Heading into action day, we had 337 teams left. As a result of today's games, I guess we do a little drum roll. 336 teams left.
Yeah.
At this rate, we're going to take about 6 months to get the field picking put together. Yeah. I guess on that note, let's go ahead and now really pull this down here, run through any other final thoughts. And Dorman, let me start with you.
A lot of people call me crazy. I like the next 2 weeks as much or more than the actual NCAA tournament. There's just craziness all day long for about 2 weeks. More games, more action all night, all morning. It's just nonstop. We saw a crazy game in an 8-9, and most people would say, oh, an 8-9 in the NEC. If you missed it, you missed a great game. Kids laying their hearts out on the floor. This is the most exciting time of the year. Any sport, any game, I love it. Enjoy, because this is the best.
I agree completely. Stalika.
It's been a tough season for the Pitt Panthers and their fans. I can't imagine why they'd want to pay $60 to $90 for a ticket tomorrow night for their home finale. But when your opponent is the Duke Blue Devils, that is a bargain compared to what you will be paying at Cameron Indoor Stadium come Saturday, where I think the lowest tickets are going to be going for, what, $8,000? If you can even get them on the secondary markets.
Yeah, good luck with that. Huh. Tytel.
So I wanted to give a shout out to Tom Izzo last Saturday. He tied Bobby Knight's record for the most wins ever by a Big Ten coach with 662. And as fate would have it, his first chance to break the record is on Tuesday night. It's a late-ish 8:30 p.m. Eastern time start in Ann Arbor against that little in-state rival known as the Michigan Wolverines. They will be without Juwan Howard, as we well know, but I love when things work out where you have a chance to break an all-time record and all you have to do is go into the house of your arch rival and do it. And I think they're going to do it, but it's going to be a hell of a game.
That is one of the ones to circle, definitely. Let's see here. Joby.
And your Patriot League winner is?
Oh, my God. Oh, jeez.
I should have played this tonight. Colgate beat
No, we should not have. We should not have.
Hold on. Okay. All right. Let's see. Rocco, how about you?
I'll have to follow that one up, Chad. But
no, it is. It really is.
I'm gonna rewind to the bubble of 2021 and try to connect the dots to 2022. You know, a couple interesting scenarios played out last year that we followed closely as a team, and that happened in the Mountain West Conference and the ACC in particular, where we had going into championship week last year, we had four Mountain West teams: Boise State, San Diego State, Colorado State, Utah State. Fighting for bids. At the end of the day, we got down to a semifinal game where we thought the Colorado State Utah State game would be win or go home, and it ended up being true, where Utah State won, they got in, Colorado State went to the NIT. And we also in the ACC saw the whole Louisville Syracuse drama play out, where Syracuse kind of came out of nowhere with Joe Lenardi, and then all of a sudden they gained a lot of legs. They played well in the ACC tournament, and they were the team that went. Louisville was the team stunned on Selection Sunday, where only a handful of bracketologists got that right. And it just told me, maybe look for these scenarios again in 2022, where we have multiple teams from the same conference fighting for spots. So the ones that clearly stand out right now are the Big Ten has three teams right there on the cut line, just in, just out, between Michigan, Indiana, and Rutgers. Are they going to take one of those three? Are they going to take two of those three? Hard to see them taking all three, especially based on what we saw last year, if that means anything. We also have the American duo between SMU and Memphis, and perhaps an A-10 twofer if we get VCU and the Bonnies in the right scenario over the next week. So just something to really pay attention to, as I do think more and more the way the committee thinks about things, I'm convinced that they may only take one or the other in the two team scenarios and two out of three maybe in the Big Ten at most scenario.
I'll throw one thing out to you real quick, Rocco, and taking the look back at what past committees do. You got to remember, we have five new committee members this year, which is more than I think we've ever had, at least in a very long time. And when it comes to the group think of a committee, as the committee members change, some of these ideas may change as well. So it's just something to maybe look for this year also.
Absolutely.
But Griggs, you want to finish the show out?
Yes, my final thought is Brian Black. This is his Twitter account. You can kind of see him there waving at goodbye. Us. Yeah, he's waving goodbye to Fairleigh Dickinson. This is something he does all throughout championship week. He sports the jersey, tags the survival board. If you don't know his story, it's incredible. Read up on it. There's a link on our site to his page.
Right up top, yep.
Yeah, in a nutshell, he suffers from epilepsy. He works to raise money and awareness for it. One of the ways he does that is to collect all of the Division I jerseys and do things like this and tweet it out. So if you get a chance, follow him, tag him, give him a shout out. If you're able to, maybe donate some money to his cause. This is his Twitter page. It's at 358 Jerseys for Hope. I guess he'll need to change that next year because I think we're getting up to 361. But follow him all throughout championship week because he'll be around every night.
Yes.
Amen.
358 Jerseys for Hope. That's the number 4 in there as well. Not the word 4.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
On that note, I do want to take a chance to thank everybody for joining us. We will, even though this is our last regular season Hoops HD report, we are going to have a few bracket rundown shows, one this week, one next week, and we're going to be doing a championship week video notebook every single night where we'll be discussing everything and anything about what happened that day in college basketball. This was our combo show tonight. Tomorrow, starting tomorrow night, it'll be a solo video notebook the rest of the way. We talked about our rivalry creator. If you have a rivalry you want us to create, we're going to start doing that on the shows starting tomorrow night as well. But on behalf of John Titel and John Sleek up here, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org in the center square, David Dorman, Joby Forza to his side, David Griggs down the bottom. Woo-hoo. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. And we'll be talking to you again tomorrow night.